Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Best of Five. Tonight on the show, our thoughts on the beta, NCR recap, Puff Ruin Smash, and there's some problems with the Power Rangers game. What are you most excited to talk about? Mike Schiller, co-host of Best of Five.
Well, I mean, I thought NCR was overall a pretty positive experience, so that was good. I've liked how Street Fighter V's been doing that, but mostly, yeah, Puff and Smash and how bad it is. Yeah, pretty much.
Did you play the beta?
I did play the beta. Played probably about 100, 200 matches, something like that.
100 or 200?
Somewhere in the range of 100 to 200.
We're going to round that out to 150 matches played by Michael Donkerschiller. I as well played the beta, and I can't wait to hear your opinion on it.
I didn't hate it. I didn't like it.
Before we introduce the rest of our panel, unsung hero, two R's. And who?
Hold on. There we go. And Sam Peasy. And Zalbag. And there was one more person. Where'd they go? I'm sorry, one more person. I'll find you eventually.
Joining us this week, as they do every week, is John Velociraptor Guerrero. Hey, bro. How's it going?
Good. I just, so my girlfriend always makes noise and forgets when I'm recording. So she got me this to hang on the door for when I'm, when we're filming.
Important question for you, John. Why the hell didn't you hang it on the door?
Because I wanted to show you guys. It defeats the purpose. Yeah. Joke as well.
Tell me about it. Speaking of John, John on the Event Humps podcast had Brian F., and if you haven't listened to it, it's insightful, it's exciting, it's entertaining, and you should. And I'm going to ask John later about some of his takeaways from that interview. Also joining us, as he does, now the now unlocked, because somebody paid for the DLC, Steve, Ace King Offsuit, Jurek. Shoryuken!
That's my character select pose right there.
That's a sick one.
Yeah, that's pretty good, bro. Especially how your hand gets cut off when you reach the top of the frame, but not the top of the frame that the audience is seeing. Can you show us again?
We don't have great artistry for this. We spent most of the budget on netcode. So,
and you know, it's for the fans. It's for the players, right? Because netcode's more important than DLC. All right, Steve. You want to hit us with a recap?
I guess I could do that. It was a pretty busy weekend. Starting out with PAX East, there were a couple events down there, kicking things off with the end of that Super Smash Brothers North America Open Series. This was the four-team championship event that was the culmination of all those online qualifiers. And it was a good weekend for Team Southeast, Devontae, Poltergust, and Wrath. They held off Team Northeast.
Hell yeah, Polt. So I'm biased. I know the guy.
Well, maybe he'll give you his controller. Because he's got a customizable controller and I believe $500 each for winning.
Sounds like hacks.
Hell yeah.
So, congratulations.
Before you continue, Steve, Die 1000 Deaths and Anonymous Rabbi Chang sub to the channel. So,
thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the sub. Really appreciate it. Helps us keep going. All right. As you were, Steve, Ace King, Offsuit Jurek.
There was also a Tekken 7 showdown at PAX East. Sponsored by Discover Card. I had to throw that in because that's part of the actual name. It was a good weekend for Joey Fury. He held off Lil Majin twice, 3-0 and 3-0, to take the title. Shadow20Z getting that third place finish. Joey was on fire. He went undefeated throughout the event. So he is looking to make his third straight Tekken World Tour Finals. He could be one of the favorites to make it in the U.S. for certain. And hopefully we'll see Majin there as well. Over to Europe for Battle Dome 2019. This was a pretty big event out in Italy, which shows in the strong Italian performance in the results. Tishuman, no big surprise, gets the win over Sursambo. perhaps the only thing that might be a little surprising is just how dominant he was. Did not drop a single set the entire tournament. 14-0 in sets, or 14-0 games, 35-7 throughout the entire tournament. There was a round robin stage and then a bracket. He was absolutely on fire. The big Tekken event this weekend, both in terms of eyeballs and in terms of wallet, took place in Saudi Arabia, the True Gaming Invitational. This was an event which included 8 players from Saudi Arabia, 3 players from elsewhere in the Middle East, including the Evo Japan champion Arslan Ash, and 5 Asian players, including Ni, Kudans, and Chanel, who swept the top 3. Kudans taking it over Chanel in a really good set. Takes home the largest single event cash prize in Tekken history, $60,000.
Not bad.
Not bad work if you can get it. And, you know, even though some of the other players didn't take home quite as much, Sora had a nice weekend. Arslan Ash picking up another $1,500, which was good for him. Sora was actually pretty strong. I believe it was either Kudans or Ni that he lost to both matches, and both matches were pretty close. So don't be surprised to see some of these guys up there in the standings once the season kicks off, because there's some deep talent in the Middle East, even beyond Arslan Ash.
You know how deep?
Did you get to listen to the commentary in Arabic for Tekken? It was actually super entertaining.
You understand?
No, but it was super entertaining. I don't think I've ever heard commentary in Arabic before. So it was something very new, and you could understand what they were the gist of what they were saying because of what was happening in the game. But the cadence was super new and super interesting, so I enjoyed that. I just wanted to say that.
Why don't you hit us with a clip or something, man?
Nah.
Okay.
It's sort of like watching soccer matches on Univision. Even before I took Spanish classes, and honestly, I've forgotten most of the Spanish I learned in those, but
learned was how to say goal for 20 minutes in Spanish.
I can't do anything for 20 minutes in Spanish or English. Moving right away.
Yeah, we're all just gonna let that hang right there.
Let's go.
Also, it's not like watching soccer in Univision for me. I don't appreciate your joke because it's culturally insensitive and biased towards somebody who actually speaks Spanish. Moving on.
Hey, I actually watched Univision. That wasn't a bit. I actually watched. You know what? Whatever. Let's kick it over to NCR, the big event of this past weekend. Looking at the Dragon Ball FighterZ tournament, because this was the last big hurrah.
Are people still playing Dragon Ball FighterZ?
Well, we'll see you later in the Evo Evo sign-up list.
There's still some names out there. There's still some players out there. Goichi going back-to-back at NCR, taking it over Kazunoko for the second straight year. Subatomic Sabers from the USA, not ISA, not the the international state.
It's a mistake, you know what I mean?
Issa typo.
Lightsabers. Jar Jar Binks. Issa. Oh my God.
That's culturally insensitive.
Yeah, that was straight up racist, in fact. Moving on.
But yeah, another strong weekend for the Japanese players, taking 3 of the top 4 spots. Shout outs to Subatomic Sabers for defending the homeland. But the one most people here were interested in wasn't the final event of NCR, and we might talk about that a little bit later, but the CPT, the Street Fighter V tournament, was the second of 4 tournaments on the mainstream this past weekend on Sunday. And what a show it was. It was Tokido taking it over Punk. They played 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Every set was final game. I believe they were all final round, too. It was just insane play. Fudo and John Takeuchi rounding out the top 4. Good to see Smug getting another strong result. It's been a while.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So and it was highly entertaining. And we have some clips here that we'll show later. It's interesting looking at this list because a lot of these guys on there lost in pools.
at final round. And this is definitely more of the guys you were expecting to see than final round was. So is that a sign that things are already starting to shake out the way we expect them to, or something else? Hard to say.
Yeah, we're talking about a sample size of one. So one out of two events this year. Three if you count FV Cup. So it's very difficult to draw any conclusions from that.
But we should anyway.
I wanted to guess on your little blurb in the bottom left on who the other three players were.
Yes, that's something I should mention. Punk continuing his strong start. He made 2 for 2 in making grand finals in the first two premier events of the year. That has happened 3 times before in the Street Fighter.
I think
five
I know
era.
Two of them. I'm having trouble with a third.
All right, well, what do you got?
I think Infiltration versus Tokido was the first two premier events in season one. So that would be two of them, right? And then
it could be.
And then the third one.
Was it Cien?
It's either Cien in season two or it's Fujimura in season three. And I can't remember which one.
Steve, do you actually know?
No, it's not Fujimura. It's got to be Cien.
Maybe it was Fudo. I don't know.
Infiltration, Tokido, Cien, and now Punk.
Steve?
You're very close. We actually have the graphic. It is Infiltration, Tokido.
Oh, that's cheating.
And Tokido. He did it twice.
That's okay.
So Infiltration and Tokido, remember 2016, went men in grand finals for each of those first two tournaments. Tokido got first in one of the first two last year and second last in the other. But the one thing to take away from that, look at their Capcom Cup finishes. Mm. Not exactly the strong finish that you would expect from them, considering how well they played throughout the season. So how difficult do you think it is to maintain that momentum when you have a start like this? Everybody is sort of gunning for you. Everyone is sort of game planning for you.
Hey, quick question, guys, just as a refresher. Infiltration is banned this entire season, right?
Correct.
So just 2019, he's back in 2020.
They haven't done the NCAA thing and redacted his wins yet, but for this season he's gone.
Well, he certainly has a bunch of L's. So moving on, what else you got? Is that the end of the recap for now?
Oh no, we've got the rest of the tournaments at NCR. If you take a look at those results, Koji KOG,
yeah.
One of your favorite game.
Yeah, but I didn't watch him play Cross Tag.
Well,
give two shits.
Yeah. Blaze Blue also taking the win in Street Fighter 4.
That's the one I was watching, but they didn't stream the top 8. So
yeah.
I'm offended to my core, and I'm boycotting NCR from here on out.
Nice.
It was pretty rough because they only had 2 streams the entire weekend, which sucks for an event of this magnitude. Mm-hmm. But what we did get to see was pretty good. Jimmy J getting the win in Tekken, and Eunice, oh my goodness, I've been saying this pretty much everywhere I can. If you have a chance, go back and watch the Eunice top 4. Tari, aka Suguri, versus Goichi. They met in winners finals, they met in grand finals. It was absolutely nuts. Goichi doesn't really play a whole lot of Eunice now, and you could see there was a little bit of character unfamiliarity, but he was, his fundamentals were so good, and Tari was making absolutely great plays throughout the set. It was nuts. Definitely check out those archives if you get a chance.
Hey, well, that's a good look, considering that Eunice has the most entrance for Evo registrant-wise right now, right?
Well, as of yesterday, it kind of shook out today.
Do we have a graphic of that, or are we going to talk about that later, right, Steve?
We can talk about that later because we still got to deal with what's coming up this weekend.
Before you get there,
yes,
let's shout out some subs.
Let's do that.
Beats by Noel Brown.
Yes.
One of our very first subs. I remember that.
Shout outs to Beats. Hurts my heart every time I have to say that because it's insensitive. However, I am grateful. And the other thing, wait, was there anybody else? No, just Beats. Steve, the biggest event that was streamed over the weekend is not on your recap, which is the E-League Mortal Kombat 11 beta challenge, which, if I'm not mistaken, was actually a race to win 5 matches with each character as fast as you could on stream, and it actually had no competitive angle other than luck of the draw of who you would fight against and how fast you could beat them.
I'm sorry.
Who won that? Did anybody know?
I didn't even watch it. I remember
I caught a little bit of it.
I forgot to watch it.
Well, I started watching it, and it had some NRS commentator whose name I can't remember, and Ultra David.
Was it Aquaman?
Yes, yes. And you know, basically they were just like tapping into other streams and talking about it, because it really was like a race to see how many times you could, or how fast you could complete like 5 wins with Cabal, Baraka, and so on. But then I just started clicking over to the actual streams on Twitch, and it was enjoyable. It was cool to see some high level stuff, but it didn't really feel like a tournament stream.
Well, that's not what it's supposed to be, though.
Yeah, it was during a beta. I think it's just supposed to drum up hype, and it's nice that
it was a fun idea, to be honest.
TDS continues to support the FGC.
Yeah, it was interesting. I just was like, at first I was like, how the hell are they going to find each other to play against each other? And then I realized that was not it. Okay. What are you watching this weekend? Steve, any kind of a point ahead for us?
We've got a couple events to watch out for. The big week one this weekend is going to be Brussels Challenge out in Belgium. That is going to be the first European event of the Capcom Pro Tour season. It's also part of the Arc Revo World Tour. So that one is approaching its halfway point.
Look what this asshole put on Sunday.
Streams will be announced later. There's also the first online event of the CPT season for Southeast Asia. That will be on Saturday. And then, that's for me. That's for me. Never mind.
First ever, main event with women.
It's going to be fun.
So progressive.
Even if you don't like wrestling, you need to go to YouTube and watch this cop segment from Monday night with all three women. It is the greatest thing ever in the history of greatest things.
No, the greatest thing ever in wrestling is definitely the math from Steiner or whatever, but nothing
will
be
there. That is up there.
The greatest thing began and ended with Andre the Giant. That's when I stopped watching.
It's culturally insensitive.
All right. So that's what to watch. Let's get into our topics, and I'd like to just jump right into NCR, since that's the most recent thing we discussed, and in particular, the CPT action. There was a lot of great matches. To me, and maybe I'm wrong, you guys can tell me I'm an idiot, but what Street Fighter V lost that Street Fighter IV had was the ability to kind of like show your personality. I feel like the game makes you play a certain way more so than IV, but I felt like that was somewhat eradicated or has steadily been chipped away at, and NCR action this weekend really felt like you were watching distinct personalities play the game in a way that I found very entertaining. And then when you see Tokido versus Daigo as a matchup, I mean, you can't not get excited about that, and it was really exciting. We have a clip here of one of their early rounds that, you know, look at the clock, and man, it was just really exciting. And we also have here some more from this match, but it's just great to see these guys. I like seeing Guile. I like seeing Daigo's Guile. And
this is a cool matchup.
Yeah, look at that.
It's a pretty even matchup. It's back and forth. It's got the fireballs, but not a full screen fireball game the whole time kind of matchup. It just feels like all around Street Fighter, where you get to see every type of interaction.
And then this is a spoiler alert. This is how it ended, which was also really exciting. Just to see some swag here. Check it.
Kuma's busted, but
you think Akuma's busted?
He's been busted.
He's really good. But I don't think he's like hurting the game good.
No, he's not. Boom. He's not at all.
Walk
dash
up.
Forward into demon. Yeah.
That's too good.
Dash up demon.
That was grand finals last year in NCR, right? And that was an amazing set in and of itself. But I do like what you're saying there about the character and player expression. We're seeing, you can pretty much tell the difference between Fujimura and Shen with Ibuki now, right? Punk and Johnny, we talked about the difference in their play at final round. And you know, I think that the game has come a long way in that respect. there's double, or there's, you know, more than one V trigger now. That does a little bit for some characters, but I do think that people have come into their own. They've learned how to express themselves more so, certainly than in the beginning when everything seemed to be like the same, like the sequences over and over again. Right. But it is becoming more and more of an exciting game to watch. Mm-hmm. I think as the Pro Tour kicked off, especially with Punk doing his one hit confirms and as much attention as that garnered, but there's a lot more to it than that. It's a really exciting final round and a really exciting NCR. I think as the Pro Tour kicked off and we got off this whole kick of let's just watch for, or let's just wait for new announcements from Capcom, and instead we're like, let's just watch the game and enjoy it. The Street Fighter V kind of general feel and community has been in a lot less turbulent of a place, and it's been quite enjoyable.
I think Punk on top is good. I think it's one of those things where people like watching him. He's a fun personality, and the way he plays the game is unique and impressive, and it's kind of the way people like to watch the game.
Hold that thought, because
which goes with the Smash discussion for later, kind of, to be honest.
Right, but speaking of Punk, we'll save that because we will show a clip of his. But before, speaking of it being entertaining to watch and showing your personality, not only do we have Smug as the mask, but then we had Bonchan using Sagat, which I've been waiting to see at high level and in a tournament.
Now, obviously, G goes against this a little bit, but I think people liking this season and talking about how personality is coming in goes that most people were right, that V triggers and crush counters were what was upsetting people and what was homogenizing the game. If you actually directly compare, and maybe I'll make a video about this at some point, what happens when you crush counter someone and then V trigger cancel it now, most of the time you're just going into a two hit confirm to knock them down because the damage is scaled so badly. In season one, you were straight up killing them mm-hmm. if that happened.
Yeah.
And the way that's changed the game and the way that's made the neutral more important and the fact that you're doing 10 interactions around instead of two is why you can tell the difference between players better. Because when there's only two interactions, they're going to tend to look the same.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you have a bunch, you start to see the minute differences people make. So good change.
We already saw a Tokido clip, and you mentioned Punk. Here is, again, spoilers, how it all ended. But I'm going to play from the beginning because there was something you wanted to point out, right?
Yeah. So, I mean,
I'm going to slow it down for you.
You can see if you noticed it here. This was a big deal this whole weekend, which was basically we talk about Punk's one-hit confirms. And here we see low medium kick into Tenko whiffing. And if you want to go back a little bit, we don't have the pen on this time. But basically, Punk has proven that he is totally able to confirm crouch medium kick. And you see him do it here. He goes into the buffer, which you would never do on block. But at the absolute max range, or if you hit a normal that gets poked out, the just frame Tenko, for those who don't remember, there is two versions of Tenko, the instant one and the slower one. The instant one does a little more damage and juggles a little bit differently, mm-hmm. will whiff. And as Elon, who also plays Karen, noted, if you buffer it, you're going to get the instant one. And so this is beyond even superhuman Punk reactions. You have to play around this. And if you don't, this is what's going to happen. And in fact, Tokido used this to his advantage by sticking out a lot of pokes at that range. What this meant is that if Punk buffered, he'd get the whiff Tenko, and then Tokido would instantly be able to punish it. And you can see he's usually been ready for it with a stand medium kick. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if you asked Tokido and he said, yeah, I'm doing that on purpose.
That's stupid. I mean, that's really good. It's so good that it's stupid. It's like when Daigo was playing Tokido and standing so as to make his hurtbox that much smaller. It's on that level that we see people picking apart this game. And it's like, how far have we come where we're talking about this kind of, this intricate level of sophistication coming to the table? It's like, this is, it has very much become an entertaining platform on which to watch these, you know, these minds battle it out.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, obviously, if he wasn't sticking out that pokes, he'd just whiff the crouch medium kick and he'd probably be safe because that move's very hard to whiff punish. Or if he just blocked it regularly, you know, Punk would go into shoulder or he wouldn't cancel into anything. So
was it crazy. Fudo that was tweeting, we don't need to study Karen, we need to study Punk? Is that what he was saying? What does that say to you, Mike?
It says exactly what you guys were all saying, which is that we're at the point where the character has become, you know, a part of the player rather than just a tool for massive crush counter buttons and 50-50 mix-ups that kill you, you know?
And so at that point, when you're not dying in one hit, you really need to pick apart the differences between how each player plays. And it's all good. These are all things we've wanted to hear for 3 years that we haven't been hearing. And almost everything negative you've heard about Street Fighter V in 2019 so far has been, we haven't heard shit about what they're releasing. It hasn't been, oh, you know, anyone's broken. Because it's hard to say anyone's broken. Like, the characters that are making top eights are like Akuma, who's like 100 times worse than he used to be. Rashid, who's 100 times worse than he used to be. All these characters that are shadows of their former selves and are a lot fairer than they used to be are still good, still functioning, and we're seeing variety in that sense.
Was anybody surprised to see Fudo using Birdie V-Trigger 2?
No, I think that's kind of a cheap V-Trigger. Yeah. It wouldn't have been crazy to see him use Mika, but Birdie's been a little bit in the spotlight, especially because of his V-Trigger 2. I think he was one of those characters that early on were like, he might be the best in the game, and it's like, well, probably not the best in the game now, but certainly worth checking out. And the V-Trigger 2 gives him some really good damage and follow-up potential once he like scores the hits that he gets or that he wants to hit. And so it's like it's really opened the character up to be more than just like his first V-Trigger basically just augmented what he was already doing. It made his moves that he was already using better. But now he's got this whole other chain mechanic, and it's been fun to watch, and it's shown that he's a good character in the right way. Like, he used to be a pretty good character because he had these kind of silly trap moves that I don't think were actually intended. But Capcom has attended to that and made him into like what I think is a very good version of a character that was formerly very frustrating to play against.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of his neutral game buffoonery has gone away. The V-Trigger 2 is a little crazy. It's kind of funny. The V-Trigger 2 is so strong, and it's actually like usually when you activate it, it's unsafe. And Fudo will purposely take a combo like almost every round when he's playing. He'll cancel into it unsafely just to get it active. And so it's like it's powerful enough to that point where you'll see him.
Because it's not just what it gives you, it's what it takes away from your opponent, too. Because the opponent has to respect it. You saw so many times where Punk was in a situation where if there wasn't the threat of chain there, he could have responded with so many. He could have responded with Tenko. He could have stuck out a button. But he had to be far more patient than he wanted to be because there was always that threat of chain. And you saw one or two times where he got hit with it, and it hurt. It hurt bad.
Yeah. I almost want to like do a breakdown of the way Punk plays at some point, because I think there's parts that like are really intricate and crazy. And I think part of when Fudo says stuff like that, it's like, wow, I've never seen a Karen play versus Birdie like that before. That's traditionally been a matchup where even in season one, when Karen was like the best she was and Birdie was probably the worst he was, it was always considered Birdie favored. And the way
go ahead.
Well, the way he played it, the way he just constantly walked forward and stayed inside the range of Birdie's big buttons is like, most people can't do that. Like, the way he plays it and the way he blocks on reaction to things and perfectly times everything is insane. And the average player walking forward, the amount of times and the amount of seconds Punk walks forward, would be getting comboed and knocked down a thousand times a match. It would be insane. Like, just watch and take focus on how much he walks forward and how little he gets hit despite that.
It's a feel and a rhythm of when things are going to come out. And everybody feels that kind of a rhythm at some point when you're playing. But it's like Punk is feeling it on one of the most intricate things, one of the most intricate parts of a match and of a round. And that is, when does your opponent want to hit just normal buttons as you march forward at them? And he's so comfortable in that and so quick to determine it that he's able to basically do that super intricate dance right there in the danger zone and make it look easy.
I think back, you know, he has been playing so, he's always been good at that. But the level he's reaching right now is a level that I don't think we've seen him at since back when there was that talk of him being possibly the best player in the world. Mm-hmm. I think it was final round 2017 when he played Sien, and he just took his Ibuki off the character select screen. Yeah. He was so good at staying at a range where he could punish V-Skill. And he did that so well. He took Ibuki's best tool away from her. And the only answer Cien had after that was Fong, and Fong's not the answer to any question.
Except who's the shittiest character in
now,
the game.
Now, comparatively, it's funny because I think Tokido is almost the opposite, where Tokido's play is like very easy to process for me. I think he's just so good at optimizing every situation that the person who's making the same decisions as him on average is getting, you know, only 75% of what he's getting. And so he's just the absolute perfection of making the good regular decisions, whereas Punk is playing in this like almost animalistic style, and it's crazy to see. It's like it's well, a really good grand finals matchup.
He was playing with weighted training clothes on up until, you know, the input lag was lowered, and he was doing these kinds of whiff punishes back when there was even more input lag. So now that that's gone, it's like, well, now he's at Earth's regular gravity after training with 100 times, and it's like, this is what you get. And it's really exciting.
I apologize. It was DreamHack. DreamHack Austin, where he did that, not final round.
So. Hey, guys, speaking of exciting, I know you're just so thrilled that this character finally got a little bit of limelight. We saw Kage. If I'm not mistaken, this was
Kage. I didn't even see this match.
Well, let me fast forward a little bit and get to the goods.
Does he win? No way he wins.
Against Momochi. Well, he's down a game already.
Yeah.
Snake Eyes was there and was playing Kage, I think, exclusively. I don't know if he played Zangief.
What is this character? I hate him.
Okay, let's watch this.
But
he's
so well dressed, though.
He really looks dapper.
But that doesn't make sense for this character to be wearing this freaking butler suit with a penguin outfit over here, but whatever. But we did get a Kage and versus Momochi's Zeku. And, you know, it's exciting to see that character variety, and it's also like an opportunity at the beginning of the season. The character's relatively new, hasn't been tested at this high level. To bust him out, you might get some wins.
He sucks.
Mm-hmm. So I'm bringing this up because it is another one of the topics, right, worth mentioning. But let's see how he does here. I'm playing fast forward just to...
No, he takes a round. Okay.
Took at least one round. Let's see how he does here.
All right.
The other topic...
Oh, he kicks his ass this round.
Can you take it to that combo again?
Okay. So, like, wait, let's go back a little bit. Let's go back a little bit.
Okay, let's see this whole sequence.
Here we go.
So he lands a jump in. You can do this with any character. not exclusive to Kage. All right, he anti-airs a jump in. Okay, he did it for a lot of damage. I'll give you that was like a Kage kind of exclusive thing. Other than that, he just did a lot of combos.
Now, how will he lose this round? Oh,
that looked cool. That looked like a frame trap set up to be like +3 or something. I'm not positive.
Let's get a little more of this. Fast forward.
Hey, how long till Kage wins a major? Or gets top?
No. Kage won't make
Okay. Kage in his current state will definitely not make top 8 or premier. I'll hit you. The chat can decide what they want, but that's not happening.
Got him.
No way.
Dude, he took that hook, line, and sinker, John.
He's one round away from doing it.
Let's just watch this in real time here. What happens? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know.
A lot of great pressure.
Why'd you download this?
Because Kage was in it.
Okay, because Kage was in it, then I think Momochi will win. If you didn't
Kage
know.
Getting caged.
I like calling him Cage.
Cage?
Nick Cage.
I like calling
him Nick Kage.
I like calling him Kage because in Spanish, cagar means to take a shit. And that's what I feel like this character is. Capcom took a shit.
Oh, damn.
That was strong.
For the longest time when I was a kid.
Oh, did he win? Okay, never mind. I was wrong. He won.
He just won. And Momochi's so sad.
Momochi should be sad.
That was a pretty sick setup. He Tatsu'd over and then demoned. And
oh, you mean the setup that Akuma does?
Hey, now, so that was one of the topics that I wanted to bring up, and I got another one, and it's a little bit, I'm almost nervous to bring it up, but I want to talk about it. You guys know who Cool Kid is, right?
I know who Cool Kid is.
No, so I was watching the stream, and never have I really heard so much of the heckling / crowd sound as I did with Joy cheering for Cool Kid. I do not... Stating it out there, I don't mind it at all. But there was some backlash. Some people were being very were offended by it, and they were making offensive comments as a response to it. If you're watching a tennis match and somebody's making that much noise, they will stop the match until the audience quiets down. The FGC has never had a rule like that. But this, I feel like, does start to reach the level of like, no, you are literally disrupting the play. So that's I'm setting the stage for you guys. Is there anything to be discussed?
I mean, it's
is she crossing the line?
It's the Kaaba thing again.
Yeah.
Do we have footage? So we
is there horrible racism involved? Yes, and that needs to stop. And
same
it's
with
disgusting.
Kaaba.
Same with Kaaba. I don't know. I mean, if I were there and I were playing versus and it was distracting me, that's what I would do. I wouldn't play the next round until she stopped or he stopped or whoever stopped. But I don't know. People are handling this in the wrong
avenues. I mean, she got a whole little segment on TMZ from North American Finals, I think it was 2 years ago, right, where they highlighted this. I don't know, man. Like, we talked about this a handful of times now and from various instances where it's becoming a problem. But I think until we get some, like, kind of, like, there needs to be a standard set. Like, the tournament organizers, the community has to figure out some kind of a rule here because this keeps coming up. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to just, like, say, well, everyone has to be quiet versus, you know, everyone can make as much noise as they want. This, apparently, it needs some kind of, like, a put down on paper ruling on what you are and aren't allowed to do.
I just feel like if they did, let's just say, hypothetically, they ban a certain decibel level of cheering from the crowd.
Right. How are you going to measure that?
First of all,
are we really going to have decibel meters?
No, but
right next to the crowd?
This is the hypothetical here, Steve. If they were to ban that, I think that would be a horrible
decision. I don't think
we
need to do it like that. I think we can leave it to the players. Like, I think you can be like, hey, I don't want this guy. And if that causes the other guy to be like, hey, I don't want your guy either, then so be it. You know, but I think as a player, you should have the right to be like, hey, like, this person's loud. Please stop them from talking during my match.
But we're
civil enough for that. I think we are.
I think the problem, right, is that it is. You can make the argument that it's legitimately affecting the play.
It is, yeah, and that's why you should be able to tell them to stop.
Yeah, if you just turn back and say, "Hey, you, don't be an asshole," and everybody around goes, "Yeah, don't be an asshole." That's the level. That's the line. If someone is pushed to do that, that's the line.
The thing I do hate is when people at the end of a tense match are like, ah. That to
that's
me
hilarious,
is like,
though. I listened
oh,
to that.
Anyway,
you know, okay, I went to Revelations like way back in the day when right after AE for Street Fighter 4 was released, and that was the first time I heard people. There were these two guys there that were screaming like seagulls, but they were doing it at every match, and it was from the back of like the crowd, and it felt like they were, no matter where you were in the venue, it felt like you were right in front of them, and they were ahing right behind you. And I at first, like, just experiencing it by myself, I was upset. I was like, these guys are being disrespectful to what people are doing here. But as soon as I joined back up with my group from Arizona, they were laughing at it and adopting it. And we do that now here in Arizona because of those guys. And it's become a completely normal and expected thing. So, I mean, this whole issue, it's so hard to, like, to just hammer down and have, like, in a box. It's, I don't know.
I think for me, it shouldn't be – volume is going to be hard to control. I think if anything, it should be distance based. I mean, there should be a certain amount of space around the players so no one bumps into them, no one screams literally in that ear. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I don't know if you necessarily can or necessarily should put those rules in, especially those hard and fast rules about volume. You know,
you could just wait for Combo Breaker because Rick's going to come up with an amazing rule like he always does to make everything better. Put it all on Rick right now.
He's just going to build he's just going to expand Combo Breaker Jail.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Man. So then you're saying more of it. Got it.
Anyhow, I think people are too loud during matches. So there you go. That's my opinion.
So I know.
I'm not even saying anyone in general. I just think that way too many people do this. And I think that if I tell you to stop, you should stop.
So I know in other esports they put the players inside sound booths. Is that what we're gonna? Is that
fuck
where we're heading?
That. Fuck
whoa,
that.
Why fuck that?
Because I feel like the crowd and the atmosphere is absolutely part of it.
But that's the thing. You could have the crowd going wild,
right,
as loud as they want.
When you put up the booth, when you put up that physical barrier, then it's no longer about the players being, you know, us being the players. There's that separation then between the players, the pros who get to be on the stage, and the Joe Schmoes. And VIP. That, I feel, would be a fundamentally change the makeup of the FGC.
I like the idea of having them, actually, for certain things.
Also, can I bring up one more thing? Karen Okami in the chat actually brought up a very good point. This is just one person being too loud, right? Or was it the entire...
Well, the idea is that it keeps recurring, but yeah, it's typically you can pin it to one person. In this case, and I'm not trying to... Joy has been on the show, and she's a joy and a delight. But, you know, Kaba, and then certainly other people.
Yeah, and if it's one person, then why have we just not asked them to stop and tone it down?
Well, we don't know that. Did anybody ask Joy, hey, you know... Turn it down
has
a little
like
I think people take the wrong approach to telling people to slow it down. I think people turn around. Like, the obvious – the thing that tends to happen is guy loses game one, pulls off his headphones, and screams at the person behind him to shut up. And that – I understand the frustration and where it comes from, but that is never going to work. And so you got to
– Yeah, get a TO.
Get a TO. Be like, hey, please be quiet. If that doesn't work – get a TO and be like, hey, this person's like really bothering my play. I'm pretty sure that would usually work. I'm pretty sure no one's ever fucking done it in history. But if they did it, I bet it would work.
All right. So that's all. I think we've given our opinions on that. It was definitely you couldn't miss it when Cool Kid was playing. You could hear it. And I was surprised at how loud it could. I mean, I guess she was relatively close to the commentary station, or her voice just carries. But you could definitely hear
it. And if your TO doesn't fix it at that point, or no one fixes it at that point, then... someone fucked up.
Speaking of TOs fixing it, Smash Mess with Chango and Fohibro. Mike, I'm going to let you tee up this discussion here.
So this is a long... I wouldn't usually talk about Smash too much. Usually I just give it a couple of lines here and there. But this one kind of exuded into the FGC. And, you know, you saw Ultra David tweet about it. A bunch of Smash players tweet at Ultra David. You saw various other people tweet about it. And this is a long, long-standing issue between the communities and between Smash. It's going on for a long time. So basically, what happened here, to tee it up, is that these guys, Chango and Fo the Hero, played in a top eight match that overall isn't that consequential, because neither of these two was going to make it any further than they did, and they didn't. There was like six other great players in the top eight. These were kind of the local guys who made it through, etc. Anyhow, teeing this up, the story is that ice climbers have recently had wobbling banned. If you don't know what wobbling is, it's the chain grab that lets ice climbers kill
you. It's an infinite?
It's if they grab you, you're dead. It's basically an infinite that goes into a kill every single time. They've banned this, and now Jigglypuff versus ice climbers, which was like a 7-3 or an 8-2, is now a 9-1 to 10-0. If the ice climbers are down, Puff wins. Like, unwinnable match. And Chango did just that. He camped on the platforms. But in response to this, Fo the Hero didn't really try to approach him, and this is where the issue came. You see minutes at a time of five separate matches where he's just sitting here with the life lead, and Fo is doing nothing to try to catch him. Mm-hmm. Some people say this was in protest to banning wobbling. He was trying to show that without wobbling, he can't beat the ice climbers. Overall, they both just kind of looked ridiculous. I can't say stupid. Chango was playing the way he should to win. But it looked ridiculous, and people were upset about this. And it goes against the supposed spirit of how Melee players wanted to go.
So my question is, because it's come up before, right? Like, for me, my first taste of it was at an Evo many years ago, Hungry Box getting booed to death. Although I think he won his match because he was like stalling or playing lame or whatever that. And that's like a huge faux pas.
And this was way – so yeah. So like the fact of the matter is that in 98% of Smash matches, maybe 99%, it's not an issue because they play characters where this doesn't happen, or even if they do play Jigglypuff, most of the time Hungrybox plays, it's not a timeout. You know, he usually wins outright even versus the best players. But this can happen. Now this is where the disconnect starts. I think a lot of FGC players look at this the wrong way, and I think a lot of Smash players look at it the wrong way. Smash is not a traditional fighting game. It's not, and I don't think anyone really does think that it is. It was a game completely designed to be casual, and in order to make it the level that we play it today at all, you know, you turn off the items, you ban 90% of the stages, you do this, this, and that. And there are parts of the game that you have to ban as well, and this isn't outside of fighting games either. Peach can do her side B against the bottom of a stage and no character can ever reach her. So if she gets a 1% lead, she would win. You can understand why they banned that. You can tell them, hey, fuck off. But I mean, then sure, Peach is the best character. All you do is get one hit and you run away and it's not a playable game. You get that. Jigglypuff can pound infinitely upwards off the side of the stage where no one can reach her. And you can understand for the same reasons why they maybe banned that. The issue comes to when it's harder to call black and white. Puff can run around the platforms and it's very hard to catch her. It's technically possible, but it's so hard that in certain matchups, I could probably beat top players by doing that the whole time. So what are they supposed to do here? And the answer is, I don't know. Like, the answer is, I think the game has this limitation. And as the FGC, we have to look at it a little bit differently and understand that their game isn't designed the same way that ours are.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, when a Smash player says something like, oh, make Jigglypuff lose every time out, and you fixed it, Jigglypuff is the worst fucking character in the game now. You just get one hit on her, or you don't even need to get a hit on her. You just run away, and as long as she doesn't kill you in the 8 minutes, you've won, you know? And so it's tough, and I don't think that the FGC should look at it as if they're being complete babies without knowing the situation, but I think Smash players should watch how far they take this, because banning Wobbling didn't seem to fix this, right? We have the Jigglypuff problem now. And I think if you ban Jigglypuff, there are things people will complain about in the future.
They should just move on to Ultimate. Now, let me point, like, a counterpoint here. There was, you might recall, a bygone era of Marvel versus Capcom 3, right, wherein Chris G was unbeatable for a long stretch of time with his Mora Doom, this, that, and the other. And then Rubik's came out with his MODOK, and he would do this shit where he would go to the top right of the screen and just fly away.
No, it's not the same, man. It's just not the same. I know that's like hard to just take, but it's not. Like, it's literally impossible to catch some of these techniques I was talking about. It's as if certain things that we did ban in these games, like, right? If the Blanca glitch had stayed the way it was, we wouldn't have been like, and they didn't patch the game, we would have been like, deal with it, pick Blanca, just do the infinite timeout glitch, and the first person who freezes the game first wins. Mm-hmm. We would have dealt with it. We would have either banned Blanca or more likely would have banned the glitch. And they're trying to ban the glitch by stopping stalling. But it's a lot harder because what is stalling? You know, that's so impossible to dictate that I think they're going to be forced to either deal with it or ban Jigglypuff as a whole. And I think the latter is a really bad option. So we'll see, man.
And I think, you know, if you didn't watch the match, I don't know if we can play the clip.
I don't know if the clip that you sent, I wasn't able to get download it. Sorry.
Oh, well, the reason this blew up wasn't because it was a bunch of timeouts. You know, that happens. But there were points where they spent 1 to 2 minutes with effectively no movement, where, you know, the Ice Climber player was on the ground, Puff was on the platform, and there was just, you know, effectively no movement. There were points where there was absolutely no movement for a full minute and a half, even though the Ice Climbers player, the onus was on them to pursue because they were trailing. They chose not to. They just thought it was so unwinnable that it's like, fuck it. And then it ended with him unplugging his controller with a minute left in the final game. It was just absolutely ridiculous.
You know, and I've got a point at, like, I know we always make fun of him, and I make fun of him because he says stupid stuff and makes crazy claims all the time, but David Serlin wrote a pretty good article, and it's not planning to win. It was a different one about the slippery slope of banning things, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and it still kind of applies today, which is basically to ban something effectively, it needs to be pretty concrete, and it needs to not become the next best strategy to go one tier below, right? So if we say Jigglypuff can only rising pound stall 100 times, you're going to do it 99 times, right? And if that becomes the problem, then we just have to keep lowering the ladder and it becomes extremely arbitrary.
I believe I have the clip here now. So if anybody didn't catch this and wanted to see it. So again, just a quick explainer of what's happening here.
So this is what I would call not something bannable. this is a, like, this isn't the problem with Smash. This is, like, kid on the left being a whiny baby. He's playing a horrible matchup. He refuses to counterpick. I know it's hard. It's hard to learn characters in that game, and he's upset about it. He wants to play his usual little regular Smash game, and this guy's not letting him play it. And, I mean, this is the equivalent. This, to me, rather than being what I was talking about, where it's unbeatable, this is a Zangief player being mad he can't beat Seth in vanilla SF4. I mean, this is unfortunate, but he is on the playing field. He could chase after him. It would be entirely possible to make a read and hit him. He's just not going for it. And
yeah,
so
what a bitch.
That's why
no.
This became such an issue.
So that clip actually came from Tyler, the Sir Toasty on Twitter. So go and check that clip out there if you wanted to see it again.
But yeah, so yeah. This is kind of like a non-applicable clip that spawned a real conversation, which is how do we deal with a game where we can't create an easy boundary that we all like? And honestly, I think they'll eventually ban Jigglypuff. Mark my words. I think they'll do it.
This and is Melee, right? We're
I think if they don't ban Jigglypuff, they'll do something like making her lose timeouts, which will create situations that are similar to banning Jigglypuff. So yeah. I think it's going to happen. And I don't actually think they should be complete. Like, if that's what they want, let them do it. You know, I don't like it, but whatever. Because they don't like what they're doing right now.
All
right.
We've talked about it enough. Go ahead. Moving on. Dead or Alive World Championship details announced. Is there anything to talk about there briefly?
Yeah. They announced this last week. Well, they had announced the tour a while ago, but they finally released the details. A few of the key points. It's going to be made up of 16 events, three of which are going to be offline fatal matches, which will be along the lines of premieres in CPT events with more points, a bigger prize pool. Also, the winners of those three events will qualify automatically for the DOA finals. The other qualifiers will be the top five players from the U.S. leaderboard, the top three players from the Asia leaderboard, the top three players from Europe, and then two players qualifying via the last chance qualifier. One other key to note here is that if you look at the point spread, they actually award more points for winning an online event versus winning an offline.
That makes sense. No, that's great.
So, there's only one online event per region versus several for offline.
Fair enough.
If we look at the full schedule, the three fatal matches, which have the automatic qualifiers, are CEO, Summer Jam, and a Japanese event to be determined later. The mix-up later this month will be the kickoff event for the DOA 6 World Championship. So that's the kickoff for that, as well as the Tekken World Tour. So
wasn't
a lot of eyes in Lyon, on Lyon this year.
Wasn't Full Schedule the name of a Marvel player?
Yes, it was.
All right. Sam Cho has a new character that looks like they're out of Monster Hunter. I don't have the picture, but cool.
Darley Daggers.
Darley Jeez. Daggers.
It's a wonderful name.
Sounds like somebody that will work at Coyote Ugly or some shit.
She, I really like the visual design of her.
I bet you do.
Oh my god. What? I just like the character design. I haven't had a chance to check out the gameplay, but the design is pretty cool. It's sort of like a pirate, sort of like a female Jack Sparrow with a little darker skin. Pretty cool. Definitely check that out.
I'm trying to get the picture here, but I'm having trouble getting a high quality one. Here we go. All right, let me.
They're all high quality. They are all high quality. All
right, let me pull the pic, and then y'all can decide if she's as high quality as mi compadre says she is. All right, here. One second. There you go. It's pretty high quality, bro.
I'm a fan.
What part are you a fan of?
I don't know why she's wearing garter belts with no pants, but, you know, like. Maybe that.
She's got a
she's not bikini smart. Costume. She's a good fighter.
She's cool. I don't know.
Enhancing in real time.
What do you like about T-Hawk?
He's the shit.
There you go.
Yo, can we look at the sticker or whatever decal on the sword blade?
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah. That's my favorite part of this whole thing.
Oh. Is that like a hammer and
it's a hammer
saw?
And the saw that she's holding.
Yeah, and the heart skull has heart skull. For eyes.
Oh, that's cute.
She looks fine. No one's going to care about this game. Kind of sad, but oh well.
Well, if you care about the older games, you have a chance to play them now. Because at PAX East, they also announced that there's going to be a Sam Show collection that will include from the original all the way up to 5 special. And it will include online play. So here's your chance to say you're going to play Sam Show and then not play Sam Show.
Funny. All right. We have a couple of topics left. I guess we could talk about Power Rangers briefly here.
Did we not already talk about this?
Did we? No, we said we were going to.
I mean, I don't know. The game had a pretty ugly release. There was a glitch basically when it came out. I don't know if it's still in the game, where essentially, you know how fuzzy guarding works, right? Where once you block, until you leave block stun, your character is standing the same way. So that's why you can do overhead sometimes when they would usually whiff. Well, in this game, instead of it just being that your character stands in the same way, your character's only able to block in that way. So if you block a jump in, they can only block high until they leave block stun. So if you do a jump in and then a low light kick, or my favorite, guaranteed. A jump in into a sweep like the old school SF2 days,
yeah,
it's unblockable. You got hit. You're done. You got mixed up, dog. So, yeah, that sucked. I think they fixed it. If they didn't fix it, it's unplayable.
That clip that we were watching is from Justin Wong's How to Play Cheap on Power Rangers Battle for the Grid. What I like is that Justin Wong was, like, the balance,
he's part of the balance
team.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, guys, here's all the broken shit. Here's how you play lame. I love it. All right.
It's okay. It's a baby game. I don't know. It's like a game for babies.
Didn't you say, what was the threshold for the Metascore that this guy would play it or some bullshit?
70. We would give away copies.
And what do we got? Metacritic score. Drum roll, please. Yeah, drum roll.
The Xbox One does not have an official score yet. Not enough reviews. The Switch actually does have enough. It is scored at 62.
Yay! Oh no, sorry guys.
All right, regardless, we're gonna move on. We have a couple of topics left. Should we hit the Evo leaderboard or the Mortal Kombat 11 beta thoughts? John, what do you want?
I didn't play the beta, so I guess I vote the Evo leaderboard.
All right, Evo leaderboard, let's talk about it. This is obviously the most important what's what I'm looking for, like the where it tells you where the wind is going. Weather vane. God, somebody help me out here.
Yeah, I was gonna say weather vane.
Anyway, this tells you where the FGC is going. Is barometer. How many people have been, there you go, barometer. For Evo 2019 entrant leaderboard tells you everything you need to know. Shall I, Steve, or will you?
Go ahead.
All right. Sitting pretty at number one. Do we know the number of entrants or just the ranking?
we don't know the number, we just know the ordering.
Wait a second. That doesn't look right.
No, that's right.
As of April 1st, you, Weisenheimer, Undernight in Birth. Uniel is sitting pretty number one. Now let's look at the real one, you Weisenheimer guy.
Well, and then one day later they updated and there was a big movement. People registered like crazy. and now Smash Bros. Is on top.
Is that, but also Tekken 7? Right, okay, so number one, Smash Bros. Ultimate. That's not super surprising, but also it is because it's Evo, right? And it's like a FGC event, and as Donka told us earlier, it's Smash is not a traditional fighting game. But they're sitting at number one. Number two, this one is surprising to me, if this is accurate, is Tekken 7. Street Fighter 5, you would expect to be that high. Mortal Kombat 11, people are excited about it. It's a new game. Every time there's a new game on this scale, people tend to jump into it because it's like, hey, the game will be early in its life cycle, and it's, you know, a chance for me to get some wins. Soul Calibur 6 is high relative to, say, Dragon Ball. Then at the real placing for Undernight in Birth is 6, Samurai Shodown at 7, Dragon Ball Fighters at 8, and Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle at 9. And that's
that
rundown.
Dragon Ball Fighters in 8, I think, is the biggest thing that stands out to you right now, because that game had the, if I'm not mistaken, the highest viewership at Evo last year.
Had the highest number of entrants, too.
Highest number of entrants. And there's been some talk about it falling off. People jump to dead game, and that's almost just like a jokey meme kind of thing.
Apparently there's a mistake, but, by the way, and Eunice is one spot up above Soul Calibur.
Yeah, so, okay, so this is Joey Cuellar, Mr. Wiz, Mr. Wizard, McRib himself.
Okay, there's a couple mistakes.
Number one, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Number two, Tekken 7. Three, Street Fighter 5. Four, Mortal Kombat 11. Five, Under Night Inbirth. Six, Dragon Ball FighterZ. Seven, wow. Sam Show. Eight, Soul Calibur 6. Way big drop. And ninth, Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle. So disregard the graphic on the screen. Steve rarely does, but in this case has, sixth. Steve led us astray. I'm sorely disappointed.
I am fired. but should point out that either way, is anybody surprised that Eunice is the number one anime game so far?
Versus Dragon Ball, hell yeah.
I'm not anymore, but I would have been before they announced it for sure.
Now, obviously, not everybody that's going to enter has entered.
I'm guessing the cutoff between 4 and 5, like after Mortal Kombat, is pretty big. And I'm also guessing there's a chance Mortal Kombat passes Street Fighter 5. So there's a lot to come.
Do you think 5 might pass 7 or Ultimate?
No,
I do think I think Ultimate's going to lock in at number one. Tekken, I would be surprised if that stayed, simply because Street Fighter V, I think I can't see that finishing third. The other thing is Mortal Kombat's final number, I do feel, is going to depend on the launch. If the game launches in a great state, then I think you'll see a big surge at the beginning of May.
What would be a great launch for you for Mortal Kombat 11? Because right now, it looks like they're on track, and they also have NRS is known for making hot fixes.
I think
and
they can do
the
no
game.
Wrong at this point.
Let's see. Let's make sure online is good. Not just not broken, but good. No real big missteps in terms of DLC practices or anything like that.
There are certainly pitfalls that are still on the road in front of them, but they are doing everything right thus far, and people are really hype. Every reveal, everything, you know, it's like people have little tiny gripes, but the overwhelming theme of the conversation is positivity and that people are just excited for this game.
Even
so
if they have major gripes, they don't want to make it sound like that. So, as I said,
I also have a question, and just to get y'all's opinion on it, do you think that at this point, not that Son of Fox has now just recently become popular, but do you think that his recent surge in popularity since like the Esports Gaming Awards or whatever they were called, that Sonic Fox could bring more people to the game by the mere fact of him being competing in it?
I mean, you would think that Dragon Ball FighterZ would have had something of a similar boost because he was like kind of like the key player for that, at least in recent times. Not so much anymore. Goichi's kind of taken that throne back, at least here in the last couple of events. But it seems like what I was getting to earlier, Dragon Ball FighterZ is falling off, I think, more so than I expected it would. It's, you know, games have quiet times, but this game's, I don't know what's going on with it right now. But so to answer your question, though, I think Sonic Fox's presence in that should have a similar effect, and I don't think we're seeing it there either.
That's a good point. So, yeah.
I think he brings a lot of attention to he'll bring in fans that, you know, aren't necessarily the kinds of fans that are going to go to tournaments. Not because of his personality or his identity, simply because a lot of people who would be drawn in by that aren't necessarily hardcore tournament type. Hardcore tournament players, especially at first.
Maybe so, viewers.
So, yeah, he'll generate a lot of interest. Some of that interest will turn into players playing the game, picking up the game. Some of that will turn into people going to tournaments. It's not necessarily going to be one-to-one at each step of that conversion process.
All right. Shall we talk about a little more about Mortal Kombat beta?
Sure.
Or do you have any more thoughts, John, on the Evo?
It's a cool snapshot, and we've talked about what should be talked about at this point. Don't take it, you know, to the bank right now. We've got a long time before Evo, another like 4 months or so. So we'll see how things play out.
Two of the games aren't even out that are on the list. Yes. So yeah, there's a lot left. Yeah.
So. Right, but at least one of those games, there's been...
Maybe Samurai Showdown will be number one.
Doubtful. All right.
Hey, Darley Daggers might be the key.
I don't think so. All right. Let's jump into this reveal. This is a Game Informer exclusive / I ripped it and I'm going to play it. Check this out. So this is the new character, Cetrion, pulling a Princess Mononoke, that deer that with all the that weird face that when it steps, it creates grass underneath its feet. This is an Elder God. She apparently has all
she
the powers.
Like an unfinished test model.
No,
she really does. I wasn't. Yeah, go ahead.
I disagree with the both of you, but I would like to hear your opinions when I'm done setting this up. She has all the powers of Earth. She is basically a little bit Swamp Thing, a little bit Poison Ivy, a little bit Avatar: The Last Airbender. She can throw rocks. She can throw vines. She can throw water. She can throw fire. She can throw all kinds of shit. And she looks a little more Injustice than Mortal Kombat to me. Okay, you guys were
saying
she looks unfinished.
Everyone's saying she looks like Injustice.
Very much. And it's like, okay, so I think the concept is very cool. I think the fact that she's doing these moves are really cool. And you can go in so many different directions. We've only seen a handful, and I'm sure NRS is way on top of that. I think she'll be a very interesting character to watch. And that's something that you really want right now. But she does look like, when you just look at her, maybe it's the gray, there's not a lot to her as a character. You look at it, she just looks like, what'd you say, a test dummy or just a test model? It's like, we'll start with this and we'll add details later, but they didn't add enough details. I mean, her costume is fine, but the actual look of her, she could be anything. She's just like a South Park character that they didn't add any kind of, attributes.
All right, but let's watch her fatality. Let's watch her fatality, though. Here we go. As a team, we're going to enjoy this fatality.
Like, go back. Like, what'd you just do?
Bro, fatality. Okay, you want to see her...
Her fatal blow is very fatal.
You want to see
the start? Go back. Go back. Okay, start. Okay. She does something really weird.
Oops. Fuck.
I don't know.
Wait. Here we go. No, it's totally worth it.
Her fatality or her fatal blow?
Now we're doing the fatality.
She did a really weird animation.
You gonna talk shit about an animation now? Here, she walked forward.
Okay, walked forward. Okay, she's like, and then like, she goes back instantly.
Yeah. Well, maybe she's not quite done yet.
Frame.
Whatever. All right, let's watch this fatality. Okay, rocks, smash. She's getting big. Step on her.
She grows.
She grows even more.
Okay, I like this.
This still seems like overkill.
Okay, this is my main. Never mind. I was wrong.
No. Because she became the size of a continent.
Yeah.
She blasted, like, the size of her mouth was probably the size of, like, Arkansas. And then the beam comes
down. Stop talking shit about my character.
Not realistic enough for me.
All right, let's talk about the beta. Who here played the beta?
I did.
Elon played. Mike played. I played. You got... 2,000 matches, you said? You played straight with Baraka?
I played 10 million matches.
Who did you concentrate on?
Baraka. I only picked Baraka. I literally didn't pick any character but Baraka.
And what are your thoughts?
It's a weird game. I think a lot of the new mechanics are stuff that they thought sounded like a cool idea, and they didn't test a lot.
Such as?
So the breakaway system obviously has been complained about, and that's the thing that I'd say is probably... either the most or the second most complained about. The breakaway is kind of like a combo breaker, but instead of, freezing the game and they fly apart from each other, you flip out of the combo. There's a lot of moves like Cabal's Run, like one of Scarlet's captures, that if you break away at the right time, you actually punish them and there's nothing they can do about it. There's an argument as to whether you can say this is objectively a bad thing or not. There's strategy involved. But it's something that fighting game players fucking hate. No one wants to be punished for doing their combo.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. People don't like that. I haven't seen anyone say it's good.
Does that I'll admit, I actually didn't figure out how to use the defensive meter, which is what you need to do these, right? Do they rebuild at the same pace as the move meter?
I don't know. I couldn't tell.
Because I wonder if those should just be locked to you get two and that's it.
Maybe. Yeah, I think Sonic Fox's idea was you should get like one, like a fatal blow. And then the other issue people are having is the fatal blows. And those are moves, they're kind of like supers, but they don't take any bar. You
it's
get
like
access to it once you get 30%, so it's like a pure comeback mechanic. X-rays were kind of like a super. This is like an ultra, where the only meter it has its own meter. Now, the weird thing about this is if it hits,
it does unscaled damage. It always does around 30%. So even if you do like a 40% combo and you add it, now it's a 70% combo. That's
seems
really
broken.
Crazy.
Yeah.
B, all of them except for Cabals are safe, and you get them back if they don't hit. So every 8 seconds or whatever, you can just do a safe invincible move. And then three, Cabals is instant and is like, it's like literally like 2 frames full screen, evades everything. So there's a lot going on there. And my issue isn't that the game sucks outside of that. I think the regular footsies are what you expect in MK. I think the game looks and feels pretty decent. It's I'm concerned about their decision making. When all of their new mechanics come out this poorly, that worries me.
I'm kind of sad to hear you say that the footsies are like what you would expect from traditional MK, because it sounded like they were trying to make it much more about a nuanced walking back and forth, spacing with punishing kind of game, which is not what I think of at all when I think of Mortal Kombat. I think of armored high-low mix-ups and just go at it. But
that stuff's mostly more like, okay, so the armored stuff is mostly gone. I'd say they did a good job on what they removed and a bad job on what they added. So maybe they can just remove what they added and it'll be great. I don't know. Basically get rid of everything in Mortal Kombat and it's a much better game.
I played Scarlet. I liked Scarlet.
Oh, and so the other news, and sorry if I'm being so negative, people are gonna love this game. Don't listen to me, I'm a fucking idiot. But the other news that just came out today is Game Informer posted, yeah, it's not 100% confirmed, Game Informer posted a interview or an article with some guy.
It was where
basically
this
says, oh, I didn't know this was on.
Right, well, no, we have it, but if you want to pull that up. So I'll go ahead and read it. So this is Game Informer's second article, not April 1st. Quote, while being able to create certain builds of characters means matches have more variety to them than the average fighting game, not knowing what moves your opponent has going into a match can be an issue, since certain matches could end up being more lopsided than usual. This much variety can also make it difficult for players to internalize all the possible matchups. NetherRealm's answer to this problem is to create a set of pre-built variations for ranked and tournament play, similar to Mortal Kombat X's. The developer has confirmed each character will have at least 2 pre-built variations using the same 3-slot system as custom variations, though the number of variations per character could differ.
So the issue with this is that the beta allowed you to customize, and every single top player that I saw, and a lot of them held polls, I think like Sonic had a poll, some other top player, Foxy Grandpa had a poll, where basically, you know, even just polling the masses, 70%+ of people said they were using custom variations.
Yep.
And they liked it, and they preferred it that way, and they thought the character fit their playstyle better. They thought they had a better choice over the moves. And it just seems like the way people wanted to play the game, and it seems like the way people got accustomed to and liked playing the game. And going back to these variations that seem inferior and not as well thought out as what you can do on your own is upsetting people. Now, this is an easiest change ever for them to make. They can just say, hey, use custom variations. So I'm not overly worried about it yet. But they've got to figure something out.
Alternatively, they could make variations that people want.
Yeah, they could do that.
They'd be like, all right, guys, fine. Tell us which ones you want. We'll make those the standard. And there's 3, so there's variation there. I mean, there's variety in the variations, if you will.
If you were asking me, I think their system's a little too complicated. There's some moves you can use only with some moves and some moves that you can't use with other moves.
Like they conflict. Like if you have this
and
move, you can't have that move.
Some of them are 2 bars and some of them are 1 bars. I think if they simplified it a little bit and made it like a choose your character and then instead of choose your groove, it was like choose move 1, 2, 3. It would be fine, and I think that's what they should do.
Right, but imagine like going back to the character select screen to change your loadout and like the amount of time, like that would just...
That's why it should just be a quick 1, 2, 3 thing. And I think that's why they're doing this preset variations, because the way it's currently implemented in the game is not feasible at all. It's mm-hmm. exactly what you're saying. I don't know.
Steve, what do you got, Bill?
I was just going to make that point. If you're going to allow people to customize their moves at tournaments, how in the world do you do that in a way that is that's not going to take 5 minutes before every single match?
They would need to fix it. Yeah, they would need to fix it. The way it's currently, they have to do what they're doing. But that's not – people are already saying, we don't want that. We want the moves.
Hey, so Rick in the chat, the Hado, brings up a very, very excellent idea of bringing back combat codes.
Are those the ones where you get
like
the party
the
heads, big heads?
Yeah.
And then but if you accidentally like, oh shit, I wasn't paying attention, the clock, it loaded really fast and I didn't get the right one, and now there's a no blood code.
But
then don't do the no blood code, then. But have the special moves selectable on the loading screen.
How would you know if I'm playing somebody, how would I know what moves they have at their disposal?
Have it be shown on the screen.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
When they're picking it.
That's like 30 moves. How would you be able to figure that out like 3 seconds?
Was anybody upset with the way it was in Mortal Kombat X?
The variation system?
No.
I don't think so.
But the problem... Okay, so the thing is, variations, even if they weren't different than just putting together these different moves, they felt different. The variations felt targeted. It felt like, oh, we want this to be the katana that's really just Jade. And we want this to be the katana that loves to throw fans. Whereas in this game, it feels like the game auto-selecting... I'm trying to think of a good example. But, you know, when you do a preset loadout in any game, usually if you're an advanced gamer, you don't choose that one. You choose the custom option. And this feels less fun than picking.
You guys remember, like, way back, like, 7 minutes ago when we were talking about potential pitfalls for Mortal Kombat 11 and being at Evo?
Is this registration?
Well, okay, so as we were having this conversation, what I'm hearing is that we have basically a way to punish people when they're doing combos, and we have this mass confusion on how we're going to go about like actually playing the game competitively, and there's a handful of other issues that Danka brought up in, you know, the fatal blows and whatnot. And it's starting to sound like this might not be as appealing to competitive audiences, which I think almost all of these issues that we're bringing up here, that's the crowd that we're talking about here that's going to be really concerned with this stuff. This just in the course of like the last 7 minutes or so, you know, comes up to me like, well, maybe there is issue, because the big snapshot that the competitive scene just got from the beta sounds like it has a couple of different problems that are really big deals. And now I haven't heard people on like social media basically talking like, well, sorry, GGs, this isn't the game we expected and I'm not going to play it. Nothing like that. But I mean, with the way these issues are being presented, I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing that. So like, where do we stand? Are these things going to be things that are putting a horrible taste in people's mouths, and they're starting to go down this negative path where they don't see the game in as good a light as they did? Because I would imagine they would cause that.
Let's give it a shot. You know, one thing I noticed in the beta was that it was clearly, like, if you went through the moves, there was some mistakes, like, two obviously different moves had the exact same description. So, like, and there was also, like, move loadouts that had two of the three slots filled, and not because one of the moves was two slots, but because they just didn't. So you shouldn't assume that what was on offer on the beta would be the default loadouts.
Yeah.
So let's wait.
Maybe they'll do a better job making the loadouts look like real loadouts. And part of – you just explained perfectly why I think people like this less than variations. It's because the loadouts felt janky and they felt thrown together. As you said, like having two moves instead of three just makes no sense.
You'd be that, like, dude.
Like, give me the third move.
Yeah, fill it out.
Like, give me that move, like, right? So if they made the variations feel like they put thought into them, which is what they – in the article, they said something along those lines, like – these are going to have thought put into them.
So then what would you like to see? You'd want to see, like, okay, if I want to play zoning, if I want to play Rushdown, if I want to play
– just make it like
whatever.
MKX. If the loadouts are what we have to deal with, then make it obvious which type this is, which three moves it has, and how that one's supposed to play.
But, like, I feel like it's too late for them to make it like MKX completely, right? Because in MKX, it was cool that they would actually have physical differences. But whatever. So that we're just getting into the weeds there.
I think they should have custom variations, but I think they should simplify it so that you can do it on character select. That's how I feel about it.
And just so you know, you can take, even in these competitive modes, you can take custom variations online that don't impact gameplay. So ones that simply look different, you can. Some that give you a boost for racking up consecutive wins, you can still use those. Me personally, I think I'm still going to stick with this game because, I mean, Cetrion is probably the closest we'll ever come to having Korra as a playable character in a fighting game. So,
what about that damn Nickelodeon game you're trying to get us to play against you?
I'm good at that game.
I wish that was a legit game.
Hey, I would say she's closer to Captain Planet.
Yeah. No, she's straight up Avatar of the Last Airbender, bruh.
Her skin's blue.
That's a good point. And her hair's green.
Yeah.
All right. So that was Mortal Kombat. Guys, I don't know if you know this, but Steve reminded us that this is our 100th episode of Best of Five. Is this all together, like all of the iterations of the Best of Show?
No, this is just the Best of Five era.
Wow.
So us on this channel, we have been here 100 times.
Neat. All right, and based on our 100th show that informed our question of the day, which two players, any game, would you most want to see a face-off in a first to 100? That's our question of the day. Let's check it out. Steve?
Let's start off with Nick Bryant, who said that he's down for more Punk versus Taquito. That was too good. Mm-hmm. Can't argue with that there. The Peach Nehi. Wants to see Yipes versus Justin in MVC2 with low tiers.
That'd be fun.
That'd be fun. The Aqua Azul wants Daigo versus Tokido in Street Fighter V because they need that Kimono Michi rematch.
Hell yeah.
Shayon26 wants to see Jimmy J. Tran versus Nii in the Brian Mirror. I know they too. Played a first to 10 when Jimmy went to Korea, and that was like 10-9, I think. Nii. So
when you answer these questions, by the way, guys, you have to entertain the fact or remember the fact that you might be seeing 199 matches. So when you're talking about a Brian Mirror match, you better be ready for 199 Brian Mirrors. Now maybe you are, but just, you know, think before you
now answer. Explain to me how this next one makes sense here. This one right here.
Roar the Dinosaur wants to see Smug versus Choco Blanca or Tokido in Jenga.
In 100 again, or 199 matches of Jenga.
It doesn't hold up. I don't care who's playing. Thank you for answering the question and participating, Roar the Dinosaur.
What else we got?
Did you see that Jenga match, though?
199 times is not going to have the same effect.
Yo, but how about this one? John, do you want to read this one?
Efren versus John, Ultra Street Fighter 4, T-Hawk versus Gouken. Enough said. 199 of those.
No, it'd probably be 100.
Yeah, you're right. It's a pretty broken match in favor of T-Hawk, as we've all figured that out.
The real match was En Mi Casa, if you recall.
I know you won here on the show, too.
Well, not really.
No, that one was for all the marbles.
It was for all the marbles, but really, he was outplaying me. Anyway, back to the question of the day.
Shiggity Shank closes us off saying that they could watch Sonic Fox versus Perfect Legend for 130 matches.
You had to watch that.
That's
y'all
the best
wrong
answer.
As hell, man. We love you, but y'all wrong as hell.
Nope. You know, honorable mentions on there. I would watch, I forgot his name. F-Champ versus
KBR?
KBR, yes. Game Blue River. I'd watch that in Marvel.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I would go fast because most of them would be just pauses for, you know, the sake of drama.
What would you, who would you want to watch a first 100?
I don't want to watch a first 100 between anyone.
What if it was like a Puff versus Ice Climbers match?
Oh, my gosh.
That set literally went 40 minutes.
My favorite to watch right now is the boring answer, which is in Street Fighter V, it'd be Punk versus Tokido for sure. I think that's the most fun matchup.
Ilan, do you have a first 100 you want
to
watch?
I didn't think about for across all games.
I would like a first to 100 in a mystery game tournament.
Lame. Steve, what about you, pal?
I actually answered this on Twitter. I would want to see Ultra Street Fighter 4 come back out, and I want to see Smug versus Dominion.
Mm.
The throwback to that set they had to qualify for Paris Games Week, I believe it was. Or, no, Canswitter Clash. But that set, that Dominion Guile versus Smug's Dudley was just ridiculous. It was like a heavyweight fight that went 12 rounds. I'd love to see it go 120 rounds.
C-Trigger in our chat says Wolfcrumb versus K-Brad.
Be a good one.
Oh god.
My favorite has a four player to watch is definitely Snake
First to 100 there.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't have enough security.
Yeah, enough security for a first to 100.
So the way we wanted to close out our show, and we only have 5 minutes left. Was...
You didn't ask me what I was gonna do. For
I thought you had mentioned it, but John.
No. Sorry. What I would do is also go back to the Ultra Street Fighter 4 days. You get Gamer B and you got Shen. Gamer B is playing Elena. Shen is playing Elena. And first to 100 healing matches.
Infinite time. Take off the clock, so though.
And everybody in the audience gets a bottle of their liquor of choice.
Take
and
a
we
shot.
All just have a rip roaring time.
Yeah, sounds miserable.
I mean, I want to see like. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot where like if you count it outside of the game, it'd get really fun. Like. Any Smash player versus Hungrybox, like, you know, there'd be fighting by the end. It'd be fun. So I don't know. But
all right. So again, as I was going to say, it's been 100 shows for Best of Five. And Steve was like, hey, what are your favorite memories? And I can't recall. They all blur together between Best of Five and the rest of the series when we had Best of Three and when the one
so
episode
are we
doing or two.
All of them?
So you tell us, Steve, what are the rules here?
The rules are there are no rules.
All right.
It's like Temptation Island.
All right. Somebody already beat me to it. Zalbag mentioned it. The Marvel Bars was pretty fun. My wife was mad at me for spending so much money on food we ended up throwing out. That was the most disgusting. It was like Flamin' Hot Cheetos with beef jerky and pumpkin seeds or some shit like that.
That was insane.
And then when I baked it. In the oven.
Never has like the dartboard strategy been used more obviously than the marketing for Marvel Infinite. They really just chose whatever they had like in that room at that point. And it was beef jerky, pumpkin seeds, and that was all they had to
That was gamer Marvel. Fuel, bro.
Nothing is ever gonna compare to that other one.
The other one was sweeter and tastier.
I almost threw up.
It was,
up,
like,
straight
yeah,
up
what
was
it?
Too.
It was like marshmallows and
it was like marshmallow,
fucking,
like butter, white chocolate, and some other shit that I
oh
never...
ground coffee on it.
Oh,
no, that one was delicious. Okay, that was my favorite memory. Disregard the guests we've had, the interesting interviews we've had with up and coming female representatives of the FGC, like Persia and Cuddlecore. Disregard all that. It was the Marvel Bars.
Marshmallows with coffee grounds on top.
Delicious. John, what was your favorite moment of Best of Five?
There's so many. In recent times, I really liked how we got to show NRS's new content before anybody else. That was really fun.
That was fantastic. Can't believe we got that exclusive. Fuck Game Informer.
And there were a ton of moments like that. But, I mean, if I'm honest, my favorite thing to look back on in the show was being able to prank call Snake Eyes, because after all
that was best of three, man. That was best of
that
three.
Counts. That
okay,
counts.
Fine.
Also, it doesn't count.
Yeah, it counts. With what was it, Mark Underhill or some shit?
Oh, Mark Underhill. Yes, that was. I mean, that was just a lot of fun. And it's like I didn't. I wasn't even on the show that day. You guys kicked me off the show so that Snake Eyes could get called. And but it was a good.
We
time.
We kicked Steve off too, for what it's worth.
Oh yeah.
We basically gave we gave Snake Eyes the entire hour and a half, and we did like the interview, but then it was like a call in, and then I think we played some matches. That was a good time, and I believe you also prank called us, Steve, and I totally fell for it when John did.
Wait, Steve prank called?
Yeah, didn't you as well? Didn't you guys like get together and like decide to totally?
What did he do?
Marcus Middlewood did.
That's a good point. Middlewood. That's a good point. Salty Claws. Anyway, Steve, what was your favorite moment
also
of Best of Five?
Also not me. Completely different person. There are two. One, I can't believe I'm saying this, was your interview with Triforce.
Oh, hell yeah. That was fantastic, wasn't it?
That was because I was very much of the camp where, okay, let's not give this guy a platform. I wasn't going to say anything, but I was really thinking it. But then you did the interview and you were able to cut through Triforce the character and pull out, you know, the thoughts of, you know, Triforce the guy. That's his real name. So I can't really say like it's, but yeah, that was right up there.
You know what, sorry to interrupt, but you know what was wild about that episode? Is that was also the episode that we had KBR on that F-Champ called and
that
said, this is KBR's
sure
daddy.
The wildest episode ever,
gosh.
By far.
Anyway, you were saying, Steve?
That entire episode was like, oh my god. And then the other part, I would have to say, just being able to be here every week, probably, you know, after I experienced that death in the family, just being able to come on here and be goofy and dumb for a little bit and, you know, have people for some reason think I'm entertaining and or informative has just been this show has gotten me through a lot of weeks. Getting to Tuesday has gotten me through a lot of things, and I love you guys. I really do.
We love you too, Steve, and it really does. It's great. It is a highlight, I think. I won't speak for you guys, but highlight of my week to come here on Tuesdays and get to hang out with you guys and the chat. And, Elon, do you care to...
I'm not following up Steve.
Yeah, exactly.
That
yeah.
No. I'm sorry.
I'm the new guy. I don't know nothing.
Well, Elon, we're everything. All grateful for you to be a part of the show, and we appreciate you being technical director for us as well as participating.
Well, I'm sorry.
Okay.
My favorite Elon moment is probably when he put the birthday hat on Steve.
Yeah, that was pretty good. It's pretty great.
No. There's also Ravens Claw Esports hashtag Feel the Claw hashtag Caw Caw.
That was good. That was pretty good. Speaking of hilarious things, recurring themes here on the show, when are we gonna get the big board, Steve, with you know, different colors and all that business?
Do I not get one?
I thought you already gave one. No,
I didn't.
Mike, what do you got, dude?
I don't know. I guess I'm gone. I don't know.
Sorry.
There's a couple
you
for
fell
sure.
Off the chair.
There, the drama levels have gone down, which is a good thing, probably. But like, we did have some funny, like, clickbaity type interviews back in the day, like the Triforce one, the KBR one, Flo, and the breaking of the NDA live on air. Those were all pretty legendary.
You mean the one
calls.
Where Antonio Javier actually called in and
yeah,
confronted
we had some
him.
Crazy call-ins back in like the Twitch front page when they didn't cycle through, and so you'd get a jillion viewers every time, and so random people would just be watching.
I remember the one time that someone called in and asked us if we had a idea about the vibrators versus dildos matchup.
The vibrators versus, I think that was our first ever call-in or something like that.
There's a. When I was gone and you guys just did the Baby John voice, that was yelled out.
But my John's favorite hat. Moment as a personal moment of is probably the last episode of Best of Three.
Oh, damn.
I just remember having a surreal moment where I'm sitting there, like, really seriously displaying Clay Fighter 63 and third tech that I have, like, cultivated over the years. Like, this skill that never in your life would you supposed to be able to show off to a crowd of what was then a decent amount of people.
Yeah.
And for some reason, people were watching it. And then we
that
played
was, that was at the end of Best of Three.
And yeah, no, actually, the actual official end was when you were saying you had a big announcement to make. And then
I think that
was
the same episode, wasn't
right,
it?
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, same episode.
And then we did the disconnected Street Fighter V. Then it
yeah.
ended the show. That was pretty classic. Also, I almost got fired
that day. Was like having your that was like having your funeral while you're still alive. People were telling
Story
us they loved us.
Yeah.
A week later, they told me they hated me, but for 1 week, we were loved.
All right, the last little anecdote about the time that we had Triforce on was that the week after... We had Combo Fiend on, and he told me that he almost didn't come on.
We
because
were getting
we
like
had...
Illuminati messages from like Voice Changer Deep Throat, like yeah, yeah, no more Triforce, no more. You know,
yeah,
like, not no show. No
actually,
show.
What's the name of the dude? Ian, right? That writes for a computer.
I thought we were gonna be banned from Twitch. People were so mad.
All right. That's enough. We're past our time. Ultra Chen. TV is up next. They will have a NCR 2019 recap and results, Mortal Kombat 11 beta thoughts, character news, E-League, Summit, etc., etc. Dragon Ball FighterZ patch talk with Tubbleware, cool. And I guess this is like a segment they have, 5-5 matchups, Smash Stuff, Evo numbers, etc. And they're coming on next, so go and give them your eyeballs. Thank you very much for watching. I'm a friend. This is Mike. That's John. He writes for Event Hubs. That's Steve, Ace King Offsuit. Check out his Twitter because you get all kinds of cool shit on there. Sure, you can. Elon is on the ones and twos over here. We'll see you next week.